Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll was previously a director of inpatient services at the Bay Pines VA Medical Center, Bay Pines VA Hospital. Dr. Carroll specialized in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you're having any problem breaking through in any sport and you need some kind of a lift through it, she can help you through it. She's available at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. And she can be reached at 813-689-2466. Well, Ty, I'm glad to have you back here. And we want to send our very best wishes out to the lovely Mr. and Mrs. Z on their anniversary here.
Yes, yes. That
milestone, not many marriages make it to 12 or 13 years, whichever it is, but to them, we wish them all the good luck, and they both work hard at and raising a family, and it always shows.
I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that. How was your holiday week, Butch?
Oh, it was great. How about yours?
Oh, it was a blessed week, and I hope all our listeners also had a blessed week and a blessed holiday.
Yes, sir. We capped it off on last Sunday playing at the halftime at the Bucks game.
Good.
My grandson Brady ran a 35-yard touchdown, and the whole crowd erupted for him. It was more than they had seen from any team from Florida on that field in a long time.
Well, Tampa Bay did have a win over my beloved Pittsburgh Steelers, so that officially dropped me out of football for the rest of the year. So.
I only talk
boxing now because of the Steelers thing. So.
Well, I also wanted to bring all our listeners up to date on two people. We asked them to send a good thought and a prayer out to Kennedy Cunningham. Finally, got a chance to have a heart available and had a successful heart transplant at the Children's Hospital up in Pittsburgh. And Stevie and Libby were there at her side. Stevie sends his regards to everyone, thanks them for their prayers, and said that no matter what he's done in the ring, this is definitely the biggest success he's ever had. So we want to send
that is probably the best news I've heard in quite some time. That is brilliant. And again, with all the donations I had seen personally myself of people buying Stevie USS Cunningham paraphernalia. You know, hopefully a lot of those medical bills will get taken care of as well. So
I certainly hope so. Yeah, that's almost $1 million between the hospital stay and the aftercare and the transplant. So that's a big nut to carry. We also asked our listeners a couple of weeks ago to pray for a little boy that plays football for me that was taken to the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still in the intensive care unit at All Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg. But Tony is coming in and out of conscience, which is a tremendous upgrade from the we don't know if he's going to make it hour to hour. So even though he's still not out of the woods, he is coming along, and I want to thank everybody for their good thoughts. So now on to boxing. Okay, where should we start? We have so many things here.
Well,
it looks like
you can start. Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
No,
go ahead, please. Please. I was going to say we had all sorts of action last weekend, so there are a host of places to start.
Sure. Go right in. Well, the one thing I wanted for a little levity, it looks like Shannon Briggs may get his shot at Klitschko.
I thought you said a little levity. That's about 270 pounds of levity. a little levity would be a lightweight joker. A lot of levity would be a 270-pound joker. One thing about Shannon Briggs is the guy is articulate, and you know he looks the part. He always has. And to the casual fan, the fan who tunes in only to really watch the Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather fights and just the really big fights, that casual fan does not know that Shannon Briggs hasn't defeated a top 10 contender in over 10 years. What that casual fan knows is that this guy is harassing Klitschko and he looks big as Klitschko. And, you know, to some extent, some people may say, well, why not Shannon Briggs? I mean, what makes his chance any worse than any other one's chance? Because really the gulf and the gap between number one, which is Klitschko, and number two, three, four, five, and six is so huge that a guy like Shannon Briggs stands probably as good a chance at beating Klitschko as some of your top five guys. With that said, though, he's done nothing in the ring to earn it. There was a poll that was posed to the German public a few weeks back in which they asked Klitschko shortly after his last victory, who would they like to see Vladimir fight? 72% of the people polled said Shannon Briggs. So obviously that's a fight that can make money in Germany. Klitschko said, hey, if the fans want to see it, you know, I'll give it to them.
Sure.
But what has been bandied about in American public, in English boxing publications, has been talk about Bryant Jennings, one Bryant Jennings out of Philadelphia, possibly getting that very next shot at Klitschko. And if that shot doesn't, if that something doesn't work out with that, then possibly Shannon Briggs.
Right.
But again, Bryant Jennings is a fabulous fighter, but he's, you know, he's a little smaller. He doesn't have a lot of power at heavyweight. So again, even though I think he's a much more advanced fighter at this point, he's much more credible, a contender at this point. Do you necessarily see Bryant Jennings doing any better than Vladimir Klitschko? I don't know, but I do know that he is more deserving of the shot than the Shannon Briggs right now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Shannon Briggs almost ran Klitschko out of Miami about a month and a half ago when he was down there training. Every place he went, it seems that he showed up and made a scene, and Klitschko was always taking his meal and moving or trying to get the people out of there. So the funny thing is,
I thought Klitschko for a while. I thought the videos were staged, and I thought Klitschko was complicit in it. I really did.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, one thing about Vladimir, and I met Vladimir personally, he has a very laid-back demeanor about him. You know what I mean? And so because he was so laid-back and he wasn't being offended and he didn't seem to be bothered or moved by it, it did seem staged. It wasn't until I saw the paddleboard incident where you know, Vladimir was paddleboarding and Shannon Briggs rented a speedboat and he, you know, was doing circles around Vladimir. Vladimir eventually falls in the water. Vladimir was legitimately peeved. He was pissed. And it was right then and there. I said, oh, this is not staged. Vladimir is not a part of this. This is real. And, you know, I said, Shannon Briggs is going to get, he's going to get a harassment charge pretty soon or a restraining order. And literally the very next day I read that his team was considering filing a restraining order against Shannon Briggs. So obviously it's not a stage issue. It's something that Shannon Briggs is really doing to try to, you know, drum up some interest in a fight. Though it's not working stateside, it is working across the pond in Germany now.
Yeah, you know, I was reading somewhere this week where he wants the fight to be in New York City. He says, you know, it makes all the sense in the world for Klitschko to fight me in New York next. From an economical business standpoint, it's a no-brainer. I was born in New York, and that venue would be packed with my supporters. He's been away from the fights for so long, now he knows he even has any supporters.
You know, if they fought in the United States, then obviously the best place to fight would be at the Barclays Center.
Sure.
In New York. Obviously, Shannon, you know, Briggs is a New York commodity. With that being said, the one thing is that fight is going to be completely trashed in the American media. And I don't think it's going to draw a significant amount of people in the States. Again, I think because of Klitschko's popularity, he is Floyd Mayweather in Germany. You know what I mean? It's he draws huge numbers regardless of who he fights. That's something that can be made, and it would probably benefit Shannon Briggs significantly financially to travel to New Jersey. Even though, obviously, the Barclays Center would be significantly closer to home, he's going to make more money going traveling abroad and fighting Klitschko in Germany because it's a bigger event in Germany.
Sure, and it's a bigger venue. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? I see that Lucas Brown is now out calling out Derek Chisora, to fight him over in England. What do you think about that? You think that'll happen?
I don't know. As we know, Chisora's coming off a loss to Tyson Fury.
Right.
And he didn't look good. He looked flat. There was some speculation that maybe he overtrained. We know the first fight between the two, he was the heaviest weight he had been in his career. He was grossly out of shape. Fury won a pretty non-eventful, you know, 10-round decision. This time, Chisora looked to be in great shape, but his performance, some people, you know, speculated had been flat, so they thought he, you know, overtrained, or that he could just be shot, you know, because he's gone through a lot of wars. He's taken some punishment. He's a tough guy. But, you know, chin and resistance and stamina is not necessarily enough to compete at the highest level with. And Tyson Fury actually looked really good. You know, he's only 26 years old. I think people forget that. Tyson Fury is a big guy. He's very gregarious. He's very outspoken, but he's only 26 years old. And he's really improved. And he's fought a lot out of the southpaw stance. He switched it, kind of like Terrence Crawford. That's not something you see a 6'9" heavyweight fighter doing, fighting orthodox and switching a southpaw and doing it relatively smoothly. He also moved a lot, and he showed great movement and stamina for his size. Tyson Fury has really improved. And so as far as Chisora goes, if he were to fight a Lucas Brown, I don't know at this point what Chisora still brings to the table. After watching the Tyson Fury fight, again, he looked lethargic to me as well. So Lucas Brown is, you know, is, I don't know. I think it's kind of odd that Lucas Brown will call out the loser, the guy who got stopped, as opposed to calling out the winner, the guy who dominated the fight, you know, so.
Yeah, well, you know, now that you're talking about Tyson Fury, I see his Frank Warren's trying to get him to fight Valdemir.
Well, I mean, what he did is he made himself, I think, the WBO mandatory. And I could be wrong. It could be one of the other alphabets. But I believe it was a WBO mandatory challenger for Vladimir Klitschko. So that's a fight that obviously they're talking about in 2015. Tyson Fury does present Vladimir with a different style matchup. Vladimir, you know, rarely, if ever, has faced a guy who is 6'9". You know, Tyson is going to be taller than him, not only taller than him, but taller than him by 2 or 3 inches. And the one thing that Tyson Fury is really learning to do, he's learning to box tall. He's learning to use his range. He's learning to throw his jab. The biggest thing for Tyson Fury is not only does he not have the experience, but he's not as technically sound as Vladimir, and he's nowhere near the athletic specimen that Vladimir is. So it would be an uphill fight for Tyson Fury, but I think he would give Vladimir looks that Vladimir hasn't seen before, and it would be competitive in spots.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to see how that that develops. All right,
honestly, I like to, again, Tyson's only 26. He's like 23-0 with 17 knockouts. I like to see him, you know, fight a few more guys. Obviously, he has a good win over Stevie. And you know what was so great about that, actually, when I watched the Stevie Cunningham fight, Stevie was cleanly outboxing Tyson Fury. And what Tyson started doing was using his size, not from a range standpoint, but he started putting his 250-60 pounds on top of Stevie. He started holding Stevie and grabbing Stevie, holding Stevie in place to throw punches. When he fought Derek Chisora, he didn't fight that kind of fight. He didn't fight a grueling, hold-you-down, sloppy kind of dogfight. What he did is he boxed on the outside. He switch-hit it, you know, from southpaw to orthodox. He moved well. He flicked his jab. He threw a lot of combinations. So what I'm starting to see is a young guy who's really starting to develop different ways to win in the ring. So for him, it's no longer just, well, you know, he's bigger than this guy, and, you know, a big guy hits pretty hard. That's his path to victory. Tyson Fury is adding more tools to his belt, and he's starting to give himself more paths to victories. What I like to see him do is, you know, get on, you know, fight a couple more contenders before he challenges Vladimir Klitschko. Vladimir right now, I mean, really seems to be at the peak of his powers. He's going to be very hard to defeat. And, you know, I think before a guy steps in the ring, they should give themselves the best chance. I don't think personally Brian Jennings is quite ready for Vladimir Klitschko. I like to see him have a couple more fights. But you know, when that lottery ticket comes, you kind of can't say, well, I'm not ready for the money, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking about money, we've got one of Z's favorite guys, John Pascal, going tonight.
You know, he should win tonight.
Mm-hmm.
He should win tonight. What's big about that fight, what's significant about that fight, is if you talk to your good friend Kathy Duva over at Main Events, Jean Pascal is earmarked as the next opponent for one Sergey Kovalev. All John Pascal has to do, all Pascal has to do is get through this fight. The fight's already been agreed to. The fight has already been agreed to. So it's just really predicated on Pascal doing well tonight. And then that fight is something that will happen in Montreal, I believe they're looking at, in March. So it's a big fight because of what could happen. And that would be a good test for Sergey. Although Bedard Hopkins, you know, really, to me, twice outboxed Jean Pascal. And we know what Sergey Kovalev did to Bedard Hopkins.
Sure.
What Sergey is going to offer Pascal, something, you know, that Pascal hasn't seen before. Bedard, for all his brilliance, Bedard is not the athletic specimen, specifically at 50 years old, that Pascal is. Pascal's explosive. He's a fast twitch athlete. He's quick, and, he has pretty good pop. Stylistically, he's a little raw and rough and a little sloppy at times. But one thing he is, he's very durable, takes a hell of a shot. And, you know, he has experience at the World Championship elite level. This is a guy that's been in the ring with Bernard Hopkins twice, Chad Dawson, as well as Carl Froch. So, and now, and Lucien Boutte as well. So he's fought at the highest levels. He's performed well. And he's always given a good account of himself, win or lose. So this is not a guy who's going to come and be in awe of anything that Sergey does. Sergey is going to have to earn it. And one thing we know about Sergey is not only we knew he was an offensive machine with, you know, bricks for fists, but what he proved against Bedard was that he also had a boxing IQ. What he may have to prove, against Jean Pascal is that he can also take a shot. Because Jean Pascal is quick enough, athletic enough to get it there. So, that's the reason why that fight tonight is really big, because of what it could set up, a good fight between Sergey and Jean Pascal.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to the other thing that I noticed was that one Miguel Cotto has traveled from his homeland to L.A., to start working at the Wild Card Gym with Hall of Fame trainer Mr. Freddie Roach.
Yeah, there was some speculation that he was going to fight again before the end of the year. He decided to take some time off, took a vacation, and so right now they're looking at that Cinco de Mayo date, which had long been Floyd Mayweather's date.
Right.
Canelo Alvarez and Oscar De La Hoya, when they signed with HBO, said we're going to reclaim that date. We're going to take it from Floyd. We're going to take it from Showtime. And so, obviously, that's the negotiation right now between Miguel Cotto and Saul Canelo Alvarez for that fight to happen possibly in May. What, again, is funny because tonight we're talking about fights that are happening tonight, and the importance of these fights tonight is what it predicates for the future. Well, there's a fight tonight between David Lemieux out of Canada and Gabriel Rosado out of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that both Canelo and Miguel Cotto have an eye on that fight because possibly if negotiations fall through, then the winner of that fight could step in and fight a Canelo or a Cotto. So obviously they're looking for the big money fight, but they're looking at a David Lemieux or a Gabriel Rosado as a plan B. So
good. Excellent. Well, it's at that magical time, and I'm going to call Dr. Chris here on the air instead of going off the air so we can still talk about it. He's got some kind of a take on this one.
You just never know with that guy. You just never know.
Hello.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Okay, Frank.
Good.
Let me go in the other room. The TV's on in here. My wife's watching it.
Okay.
It's raining like hell up here.
Windshield
wipers aren't working good. I made the wrong turn.
Christ,
it took me 20 minutes out of my way. not that much. Yeah, go ahead. I'm gonna go have something to eat after the show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's Ty and I on here tonight, and we were just sitting here talking about some.
Do I have a good connection? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can.
You're wonderful. Yeah.
Sure.
Something's wrong with hang on, let me see what my volume is on.
Never easy talking to Chris. I cannot love him.
I wanna hear what you guys think about what Bradley says about Chavis.
About what?
About Chavis.
Frank, my volume's so low I can't hear. Hang on a minute, I'm putting this damn volume up.
So you're talking about Bradley and Diego Chavez. Oh, yes.
Right. Yeah.
Bradley's going to win that fight. That's not going to be.
Yeah. But I love the fact that I don't know whether he's trying to get things up to speed or, you know, with the PR, but when he starts calling him a dirty fighter, I thought that was...
You know, the funny thing is for Bradley to call somebody a dirty fighter, and that's what he's been called his whole career. Not that Bradley's a dirty fighter, but he has a tendency to have a third fist that sits right on top of his neck. Some people call it a head, but Bradley throws it like a fist at times. So he's been labeled a dirty fighter several times throughout his career, so it's kind of interesting to hear him call someone else a dirty fighter. I've seen several of Diego Chavez's fights. I can see why that may apply to a Diego Chavez, but he's not a dirty fighter anymore than Tim Bradley is. They're rough fighters.
Yeah. Are you there, Chris? I guess his volume's not working in the other room.
You know, the one thing about Diego Chavez is he gave our buddy some pretty good rounds, Keith Thurman. And actually, Keith credits Diego Chavez with giving him one of his toughest fights.
Go ahead.
I was saying, yeah, Diego.
How are you doing it?
Yeah, Diego gave.
He don't know any more than me.
How can you not enjoy this, Butch? I'm sorry.
I gotta tell you, I've known this guy for over 50 years, and this is a common everyday thing.
See, you know, the funny thing is I'm a documentary filmmaker. I prefer doing documentary over scripted material. This is part of the reason why, because you never know what's going to happen, you know? There's nothing like it. I could spend 24 hours just filming Dr. Chris and talking boxing. I guarantee you I'd be at Sundance and win an Oscar.
I finally got my damn cell phone working, guys.
There you go.
How you been? Haven't talked to you guys for a while.
How you doing, man?
I haven't, ever since my great forecast on that Kowalewski fight, I haven't had a chance to yak with you guys. What do you think of that fight?
Which fight is that?
Kowalewski.
Oh, the Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah, it's the last time I talked to you guys.
Yeah, we haven't spoken since then. What did you think of that fight?
Yeah, that was a hell of a... I figured it was going to go that way. I felt pretty strong about it. Finally saw the Pacquiao fight. You know, that Algieri wasn't as much as I thought he was. He got a lot of guts, but that's about it.
Yeah, but no, he was nowhere near Pacquiao's level.
No, Pacquiao... punched him around, knocked him down 15 times. I'll bet you Provitnikov, what's his name? Provitnikov? He's kicking himself in the rear end for letting that guy off the hook. He should have knocked him out. He kept trying for one big punch. If he would have just gone to the body a little more, he would have never lost that fight.
Yep.
That was sad. That kid can't hit hard enough.
Oh,
and he moves. He moves so fast, he's on his toes all the time. He don't have any leverage in his punches, you know.
He plants the punch. And you know what? And the funny thing is, but in spite of him being rangy and being quick of feet, he's still very open. He's still not so technically sound to where he's not, you know, he's not slick at all. He's not a defensively slick guy at all.
No, he's not a slick fighter. He depends all on his feet. He doesn't know what to do with his hands. He doesn't know how to block punches. He's moving...
Nope.
Moving, and he's wide open. Christ, Pacquiao snuck a bunch of them in there, you know?
You know what I think his problem is you know, he's a former champion kickboxer, and I've trained in boxing and also Muay Thai, which we kick. And when you kick, you have a different range, and you can defend differently. You can drop your hands. You can pull back a little bit because you're at leg range. And when I was watching him fight, it seemed like he wasn't comfortable defending within fist range. He had to, you know, that's why he kept moving out of range because he's used to fighting at a point fighting range, not, you know, kickboxing.
Yeah, because that foot can reach you easier than, the foot can reach you easier than a jab or a punch, and he stays out too far. Pacquiao closed the gap on him, though.
Yep, and then when Pacquiao closes the gap, he's not used to being able to necessarily defend himself with just his hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still think that Pacquiao, he's got more than I thought he had left. He surprised me, that little guy. Now I think his trainer is smartened up and says, we're going to fight smaller guys now. Because he's not the same Pacquiao.
No.
We're going to fight smaller guys, but those smaller guys are going to be just as fast as him. Yeah?
Yeah. Well, one thing he's done is, if you look at his opponents since he was knocked out to Marquez, he's fought Brandon Rios, who's an aggressive, pretty big aggressive guy who throws a lot of punches, but he throws a lot of punches and he doesn't sit down on many of his punches. He's a very straight-ahead boxer. Pacquiao danced around that guy, was never in trouble. He fought Tim Bradley, who's an elite fighter, but he's a guy with, 32 fights and 12 knockouts. And then he fought Chris Algieri, the guy with, 29 fights and 7 knockouts. So he hasn't fought, really, since the Marquez fight, a guy who's really capable of damaging him with a clean punch. Brandon Rios could do it through a war of attrition, but he was never going to be able to catch Pacquiao. So I think you're right that they've been smart with how they've matched him since the knockout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, moving down. I never understood how the guy could move up that many divisions and do as well as he did. That's why I thought Kovalevsky was going to beat Hopkins. He's too damn big. He come in a ring that night, 188.
Yeah,
that's yesteryear's heavyweights.
Yeah,
that's the heavyweights of the Walcott Marciano era. Jesus.
Bernard Hopkins said he felt like a middleweight in a ring with the cruiserweight.
Yeah.
And you always said he's never a big middleweight.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's a good explanation. Felt like he was in the middleweight in there with a cruiserweight. Well, he was. The guy's 188 pounds, no fat on him, and a heavy puncher, very aggressive. He could move up the cruiserweight, actually.
You know what, Dr. Chris? Our buddy Zito, our co-host, told me to tell you were absolutely right. If you remember, when we were on the show, you said that Kovalev was going to win, and he said Hopkins was going to win. And he said, hey, I can't do the show this week, but if Dr. Chris comes on, tell him.
Don't worry, I'm going to send him a cooked crow. Don't worry, he's getting a crow dinner. I have a cook that's in the freezer. I'll send it to him. I want to hear his Philadelphia Eagles pick this week. What's he got to say about the Eagles this week?
Who do the Eagles have this week, Butch?
Seattle.
With Seattle.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know, man.
That's a hard pick, isn't it?
I don't know. Seattle shows some vulnerability, but, the last two games, they've won both games 19-3. They beat against good teams. So, they've gotten a lot of guys healthy, and they were vulnerable. You could run up the middle against them, but since they've gotten those guys healthy back, they've kind of shored up the middle. They were always tough on the outside defensively. So I don't know. That's going to be interesting. If they don't, they got to get.
That's
a
hard pick. I've listened to all
pass rush on Mark Sanchez and slow McCoy down. So that's a tough pick.
Yeah,
that is a tough pick. None of the experts, so-called experts, they're all going, well, if Seattle does this, then the Eagles will be in trouble here. But then if the Eagles can do this, then Seattle's, and they're going back and forth. And when it was all over, they don't know any more than I do. So anyway, I got a kick out. Even Brian West, what's his name?
Westbrook.
The halfback.
Brian Westbrook.
Yeah. He would not make a prediction. He said if Seattle's defense does that, slows them, then they could win. But if Philly does this, then they could win. And the guy kept trying to pinpoint him. He said, I don't know. And he didn't want to go against his former Eagles,
No.
So he's a pretty decent commentator, that Westbrook. I like him.
He is. He does. He does a good job.
Yeah.
He does the after show.
Oh, post game live. I love post game live with Michael Barkan.
I watch it I watch that. I get bigger kick out of that than the game half the time.
I do too. And Dr. Chris, I do too. You know what? It's funny to watch it when the Eagles lose too, because those guys are hysterical. They are amazingly funny.
Hell yeah! And then the mayor comes on. He don't. You know.
Oh, Ed Reddell. Yeah.
And then Dittinger, he's pretty shrewd. He makes sense. Everything he says makes sense. And he doesn't tell the truth.
He used to work for NFL Films, I believe, Butcher. That's part of why he's so knowledgeable. He really breaks it down. I love Ray Dittinger.
Yeah.
Oh, he's very, very good at what he does.
Yeah, very good at what
he does. But I watched that show. I watched it a couple of times after the Dallas game. I watched it twice. I got a kick out of it. You missed some things.
Yeah, it's so entertaining. It is so entertaining.
But they got a great group together. I liked it when they had Hebron on there. I liked it when they, you know, I liked it all. No matter who they get on air, it's always a good guy. Westbrook does a fine job.
He really does it. Oh, yeah, I do remember when they had Vaughn Hebron on there. He did used to be
Remember Hebron?
Yeah,
he come on. He was very good.
Yeah, I was surprised.
What happened?
He did a really good job. Yeah,
he was terrific on that show.
Yeah,
and he dressed up nice, too.
He was
well-dressed.
He cleaned up pretty well.
Yeah, he did really good. He didn't have any of the effects.
The one thing I will say to you Eagle fans, you guys, Eagle fans, are longtime football fans as well. The Eagles look good, but there's a part of me that's still waiting for Mark Sanchez to look like a New York Jet. So let's see what happens.
That's what you're starting to sound like Skip now, and Skip and Smith, you know? Skip. They hammer each other pretty good. They were funny yesterday. I laughed at him yesterday. But Skip says, "Mark Sanchez, are you kidding me?" You know, you know, and that's all Smith got to hear. Then he goes, you know, because he's an Eagles man. And Skip is all Dallas, and Skip hasn't survived the Dallas whacking. You know.
Oh, they
do. So what do we got coming up? Hey, well, by the way, Klitschko looked good, knocking that big. Man, where the hell did he come? All of a sudden, he got more aggressive. He's leaping in there with left hooks.
Hey, Dr. Chris, what did you think about Pulev's style, the way he fought Klitschko? He fought Klitschko like he was the taller guy. You know, he had a kind of mummy style. What did you think about the way he was fighting?
Who's that?
The guy that Klitschko knocked out. What did you think of his style?
The Bulgarian? I never saw a style like that. He looked like he was waving at the crowd or something. I never saw a guy come out with his hands up. Maybe he's waving at his mother. He better keep his eye on a damn fighter. Next time. I never saw. Well, you know, in Bulgaria, how many fighters you got in Bulgaria? About three.
Yeah.
You know? So, what are you going to do? Who are you going to spar with? You know? I don't know where that guy come from. He was tough and he was big, but.
Oh, he was tough.
He was tough, but he got bombarded.
You know,
and when
from
the fight,
I had seen him fight a few times. He throws a pretty good jab. He even showed that against Klitschko, and I saw that he fought with that style. But he was typically fighting guys that he was taller than. Against Tony Thompson, he was just younger and fresher. And Tony, to me, looked like he was tired from the trips overseas with David Price.
Yeah.
But every time I saw the guy fight, he was fighting guys he was taller than. So he would pull with his head straight back and have his arms like that, and the guy couldn't get to him. But I'm like, you're fighting a guy who was 3 inches taller than him, Vladimir Klitschko. For him to fight with his arms out like that and to pull with his head straight back, he was still going to get hit with everything Klitschko threw.
Yeah. Well, maybe there was a lot of flies in the ring and he was waving them away or something. I was trying to figure out, where the hell did this technique come from? But Bulgaria, well, who knows, you know? Maybe they got I don't know. I never saw that style in my life, but he should come to America because he got some potential.
Yeah.
He's pretty young.
He's tough.
I mean, he got dropped, and that one left hook he hit him on the cheek, I guarantee it. When it was over, I said, I think he broke his cheekbone. Did you guys hear any more about that? Did he crack his bone?
No.
I didn't read anything. In fact, you know what? The one thing I read after the fight is the Bulgarian Pulev said, Vladimir Klitschko got lucky, and he needs to earn my respect. He didn't even want to take the random testing, so he's not even accepted the defeat. So even though he got destroyed,
Well, I was showing a house that day. We had an open house that the builder built, and we have the listing, my son. And I was showing a house, and the first guy to come in was a German. And he said, I came over late. He said, where were you? I said, I was watching a Klitschko fight. Well, man, his eyes lit up. He said, I love Klitschko. He fights in Germany all the time, and he's a hero in Germany. And he had his cell phone, and he said the latest information on the Bulgarian was that he had a cracked orbital bone. And he said they're talking about it, but they don't know. They haven't seen the X-rays yet, but or it wasn't on the news. Whatever happened, but I never heard anymore.
Klitschko faced him with a right and was hitting him with lead left hooks. Klitschko, that would easily, I could imagine, breaking a cheekbone or orbital bone.
Yeah, that's a skull. Yeah, the poor guy. Who the hell did he fight? That's what I wanted to know. Did you say you saw him before? I never saw the guy fight before.
Yeah, he actually beat our friend that we've talked to several times, Tony Thompson. But Tony said that Vladimir was going to destroy him. He said Klitschko, he said that Pulev, the Bulgarian, had a good jab. But he attributed the loss more to him, just kind of not giving himself the proper time to prepare, which we all questioned when we had Tony on the show. We're saying, don't you think you're taking this fight kind of quick? But I honestly thought that he would adopt his style to fight the taller man, and he didn't look like it at all.
No, he didn't.
You can't give a guy – once you give Klitschko that kind of confidence to where he feels he can hit you at will – I mean, then you got to see a very aggressive Klitschko, and an aggressive Klitschko is a dangerous Klitschko.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed the fight. Usually, I'm calling him a bum, my God, a dancer, what the hell, putting the crowd to sleep. You know what I mean? The way he fights,
you know,
and he holds on.
The other thing too is the Bulgarian. It wasn't a big puncher at all. That's the big thing, too. Even though he was a big guy, big, tough, strong guy, he wasn't a big puncher. So Klitschko could unleash his offense a little sooner. He didn't have to be as cautious.
Klitschko wasn't necessarily going to drop him
with one punch.
I mean, Klitschko could be fighting a guy 200 pounds, and if the guy feints a jab, Klitschko will jump back 4 feet like the guy's got the hardest punch in the world. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
He fights scared. That's not good. But he didn't fight scared against that guy. About 5 years ago, a guy came over from Bulgaria, and his hero was Rocky Marciano, and he was a 191-pounder. And he won big, and he never came back to this country again. But he is about the best fighter I ever saw out of Bulgaria and that section of Europe. I never saw a guy that good. And he never came back to this country. He was undefeated, too. They're like 29 wins, like 27 KOs, and he was a cruiserweight. But I never saw him. And then this guy come along and went waving to the crowd the whole fight. Maybe he didn't hear the bell. What are you going to do? So what do we got coming up? Anything good?
Well, tonight next week, actually, you have a big card with Amir Khan versus Devin Alexander. And so that's the main event. Also, Keith Thurman fights on that card. It's a pretty big card.
Oh, really? You know what? I think Keith is waiting in the wings. I really think, not too far just in the future, he could beat Mayweather.
Are speculating that he is the future of the welterweight division. That's what most people think, that the welterweight division is in flux. You got a lot of guys coming up, but he is the guy at that division, they believe.
He throws the best. He throws a left hook to the body like Golovkin. Imagine that. You got a welterweight with a great left hook to the liver, and you got Golovkin. And I've never seen a welterweight hit that hard to the body since Tony DeMarco. Right, that's going back a long time ago.
Going back a ways, yeah.
You're going. But he was 5'5", and he had 72-inch reach.
Wow.
And he had a tremendous amount of leverage, and he hit Basilio in the chest. I thought he caved Basilio's chest in, and Basilio was hurt, but DeMarco didn't know it, and he didn't take advantage of it. And so many years later, Carmen Basilio came to Booth when he was representing Genesee Ale. And I gave the introduction, you know. He was voted the third most durable fighter of all time till the first half of the century. And I'm going on. And he didn't know any of that. So he's needling me. And then the guy, the bartender says, that was there, said, hey, Chris can play golf. You better not challenge him. And so we were going back and forth, you know, kidding Basilio. When the show was over, when he was done talking, we met out in the center of the ring there, and I said, I'll play you some golf. How much you want to bet? I told him, I said, I'll take some of that money you made fighting that old man Robinson. You know? Well, he gets mad. You know, I said, you wait until Sugar Ray was old. You know, he hit me in a left hook in the back when I wasn't looking. With a left hook, I almost went to my knees. And then he turns around and says, come on, wise guy. I said, I never hit a man with glasses. You know, he takes them off. You know, but he's a very funny man. But I said, listen, I saw DeMarco, when he hit you, you turned green. And I said, and he didn't know you were hurt. I said, I got a better left hook than DeMarco, so look out. You know?
You know, it would have been hard for DeMarco to actually believe he was hurt because, I mean, like you said, he was so durable and resilient. You know?
Yeah, it was so damn tough, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was so tough. I mean, he knocked Johnny Saxon out with body punches. Mm-hmm. And Saxon, nobody knocked Saxon out. He didn't even hit him in the head once. He hit him in the damn body. But he tried Carmen twice, and Carmen won the same way, identically. The next fight was identical to the first. And that was always Klitschko's, Emanuel Stewart's favorite fight. Anytime, you know, something would really become a brawl, he'd say, damn, it looks like Basilio DeMarco, you know. And he's one of the few guys that ever brought that fight up was Emanuel Stewart, you know. And that was a hell of a battle. Oof.
Yeah.
And Basilio had a great left hook to the body, too. But,
yeah.
He was a tough guy. When my kids, when I put a Basilio film on to show my kids, they go, damn. He must have had 400 fights with that face, you know. Holy Christ! He said, "What? He must have got hit with a shovel or something." Well, you know what Carmen told me that day? He said he used to cut all the time. He used to get cut, and Angela Dundee used to say, "You got to be careful how hard you hit Carmen with the sponge because it'll open up a cut." And Carmen used to get mad at it. So he's having lunch with a doctor, and a doctor tells Carmen, I know how to stop you from getting cut again. He says, how? He says, your bone is too prominent around your eyes. You got to flatten it out a little bit. Carmen says, okay, let's do it. So they go over to his office. The guy puts Novocaine in there, and he gets a file out. He makes a big cut down his eyebrow, and he files the bone down.
Mm-hmm.
Files it down with a bone file that we use on jaws when we take teeth out. And I'm going, are you crazy, Carmen? Are you nuts? He said, then he did the other side. He said, man, I felt great until that Novocaine wore off. Then I wanted to go back and kill that doctor. He said, it hurts so bad. I said, you can't go in and have your bone shaved down like that. But, you know? I said, what the hell's wrong with you? After I did it, I regretted it. He said, but you know what? I never cut again.
You never cut.
And I thought about it. I said, wait a minute. You didn't cut against Gene Fulmer. You didn't cut against Robinson. But he never cut again after that.
A lot of fighters nowadays, particularly mixed martial arts fighters, because they fight with those 4-ounce gloves, they cut all the time. And so it's become common practice for fighters to get their eyebrow bones shaved down. So it doesn't protrude so much, so they don't cut. I can think of at least 3 or 4 MMA fighters who have done it, and it's funny that they.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's become
I didn't know
more common nowadays. Yep. And it's begin again. It started kind of with Carmen Basilio.
Mm-hmm. Because he did. He's the first guy I knew to do it. You know?
Yeah.
If they could have shaved my nose down a little bit, I'd have been a better fighter. It was too big a target. Oh, man. When you got a big nose...
Dr. Chris, today, who reminds you of Basilio at all? Any fighter out there where you look at and say, you know, he's kind of reminds me of Basilio?
remind you of Vasilio? You know, I saw every fight he ever fought from the time he got a he fought against Kid Gavilan. He's the only guy I ever saw lift Gavilan off the floor with a left hook, and Gavilan hit the floor on his rear end, like, and it made a loud noise, and Gavilan was shocked because Sugar Ray could, nobody ever knocked Gavilan off his feet. Sugar Ray, nobody. And Basilio's the only guy that did it. He did it with a hard left hook. And if I had to think today, nobody fights his style anymore. He came in low. Nobody. That's what I said. I said, if you take that Abraham guy,
yeah.
Carmen Basilio had him and trained him and got him down low and covered up, you know, and didn't use that stupid peekaboo style. He could have been, you know, resembled his fighting style, but you can't say he did. I don't know if there'll ever be another Basilio. He was so damn tough, and you know, he had great big hands, too. His hands were heavy.
Why do you think a lot of fighters nowadays don't employ some of the, like, when you talk about Basilio, he would crouch low. Jake LaMotta was another one who would get low and under punches. Rocky Marciano, he would kind of lean over to the right, but he would crouch low to be under punches. Why do you,
right.
And one reason why you don't like Abraham is because you say that's not defense. And it's funny because we look at guys like Marciano, Basilio, LaMotta. These are guys who are tough, and we know they could take shots, but I don't think they got the credit for their defense because they came in low and got under punches. Why do you think fighters don't do that anymore?
I have no idea. That's why I say they need more Philadelphia trainers out there. Spread them around the world because that style is lost. I haven't seen a guy bend over at the waist and go down low and leave you the top of his head to hit because nobody will do that. You know, they'll break their hand. So they, Carmen Basilio was low against Robinson, and LaMotta went lower than Basilio against Robinson to stop that.
Yeah.
And you don't see that style. Well, who in the hell is teaching this? This peekaboo where you put the hands on the side of your head and they punch you right in the middle of the forehead or swat you behind the damn ear. I don't think it's such a great style. I would love to have trained that Abraham and get him to do with a little bit of Basilio style and watch Marciano. Marciano laid back on his right foot.
Yeah.
He laid back on his right foot to avoid the jab. And when he would leap him with his right hand, he couldn't use his left hook until he reset his feet and come back with a hook. There was no way Marciano's arms were so short at 68 inches that he had to fight the style he did. And I thought he did a tremendous defense. I mean, I thought his defense was tremendous. And I mean, Walcott was a formidable opponent, a very powerful middleweight. And Walcott really stung him a few times. And Marciano hung in there, but had he not had that defensive style that he did, Walcott would have knocked him out.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, same with Jake. And through the years, through the last 50, 60 years, I haven't seen too many guys copy LaMotta. Maybe they looked at LaMotta's face and said, "See what the hell you get when you bend over at the waist and say." The hell with that.
You know what?
You know?
I think it's the ESPN culture. People don't watch whole fights. They see clips. And so what's Jake LaMotta known for? He's known for being tough. So when you see clips of Jake LaMotta, you see him taking shots. It's funny because I've watched all his fights with Sugar Ray that are on video, and it's amazing how many of Robinson's jabs sail over his head because he's just, he's just getting
sailed right over his head.
And it's funny because when you talk about those fights, you don't talk about that. All you talk about is, well, he was the first one to give Sugar Ray his loss, St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Man, Jake is amazingly tough. But you don't talk about how he slipped punches. When you talk about a Arthur Abraham and that peekaboo style they have that they employ with that high guard, what it does is it handcuffs them. So when somebody's punching at them, they cannot punch. The one thing about a Basilio or LaMotta, once they got low and the punch sailed over them, they were in perfect countering position. They could punch.
Right.
But,
they could leap in, close the gap, and use their legs.
Exactly.
And they were
exactly.
One man gave LaMotta credit, and that was Teddy Atlas. He said LaMotta was a much better boxer than people gave him credit for. all around. He said Jake adapted to the fighter he was fighting. He fought Bob Satterfield, who was the hardest punching heavyweight in the world, and he knocked Satterfield out in Detroit. He used to go out there at 168, 170 pounds and fight anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down the Hagler Duran fight down at Atlantic City, and Jake was the MC. And Jake said, I had 150 fights. I fought the toughest fighters in the world. He said, in my whole career, I never made $1 million in gross to gates, you know. Blah, blah, blah. So I went down there, and I say, Jake, I said, Hagler would have given you all you wanted. No way. He said, I knocked out Satterfield. I knocked out heavyweight, light heavyweight. I said, Hagler would have given you all you wanted. He said, you say that again, I'm going to come out from behind that booth and kick your rear end. I said, come out.
Am I on?
He talks real rough. I said, I know your whole career, you know.
Can I hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, Repussy, Christ, where do you, what was he, wait, hiding in a closet?
I was having some gluten-free pasta, and then I hear you talking about Hagler. You forget that a guy named Butch and another guy were there with you at Atlantic City. You know,
hey, Frank, put him back in the closet, would you, Frank?
He's losing it, Frank.
Put that guy back in the closet. He must come out once a week for this show, and you know, what the hell?
You know, you went up to him, the guy didn't even know you. You were so punchy. You know, your recollection of those events
at
Atlantic City are a little
what?
Different.
Frank, block his number. Block his number next week, will you? Man, where the hell did he come from?
I drove down.
He must wait for this show. Hey, imagine a guy from Collindale talking like that, Frank. You know? What the hell they know in Collindale about boxing? Sonny Kane, the mayor. No, who was the mayor up there, that big guy? Ronnie?
Yeah. He's
the member. What was his name?
100 years.
He's still the mayor.
Yeah, I know.
I put the gloves on with him one time. He wanted to box me because he had about 30 pounds on me, and I cold cocked him, and he took them gloves off in about 2 seconds.
He had
Kelly. His name was Kelly.
Yeah.
He had teeth coming. He had two eye teeth. His eye teeth came out of his gums, and when I hit him, I didn't know they were aiming straight out, and his tooth came through his gum. But I just hit him with a little left hook. He quit. First time he got hit, he quit. I said, I think I'll stick to politics. They told him the other day he's been mayor of Collindale since the borough was dedicated. Right, 50 years, I think he said.
That's a long time. Frank and I cannot dispute your recollection of Kelly, but you know, if your recollection is anything like Atlantic City, I don't know, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Matter of fact, me, you, and Frank, we went to the fights one night down there. What fight was that we went to?
That's exactly the one he's talking about.
That's the one we went to. The Hagler fight.
You guys were, that's right, you guys were there. You remember when I went down and talked to Jake? You guys.
I still got his autograph on the front of that boxing thing. I want to put it on eBay someday.
Yeah.
I saw the original program.
Yep.
Well, I didn't know that. I remember you went with him. Yeah, Frank drove.
Yeah.
He had to listen to my stories all the way down the shore. I saw them earplugs go in. I figured I better shut up.
Hey, Frank, before I go, you know, because Chris knows 1,000 times more about boxing than I do, but I do know about his freezer. And when he offers you something from his freezer, My humble advice is turn it down because it probably has dog hair on it.
Frank, how much do you pay this guy, Frank? Huh? You send him a check every week?
Hey, Chris.
You got to get a negative cash flow. Don't give him any money. That way maybe he'll turn his damn phone off or something.
How many dogs you got in that freezer?
My son has 3 and I have 1.
There you go. anyone to give you something from his freezer.
My dog. I'm going to have my dog stuffed. I'm going to have my dog stuffed. I'm going to get him to you. I'm going to bring him down. You can put him in your thing down floor on your mantle. My dog Reggie. I don't have the heart to have him cremated. Every time I look at him, I say, Reggie, you can stay there. Nobody's bothering. It's cold as hell in there. That's all. So, my son, we scheduled a cremation, but we never did it. We were going to cremate all of them, but we never did it.
It made those
fish. When I gave you those fish that the dog was on, that tasted pretty good. You said you didn't know what the hell you were eating.
Yeah, you
know, I put them dog right on them fillets I gave. You didn't know. You didn't know the difference.
I said, oh, this is a new invention that Chris come up with. Just wash your teeth as you eat the fish.
Oh, God.
You can't make this stuff up. I mean,
when you call next week, I want to be, who are you picking in the Eagles game tomorrow? Who are you picking in the Eagles game? Give me a forecast on it.
Who they play
it? Seattle.
Oklahoma.
I'm going with the Oklahoma. No, that's college. No, I only bet on the
winner. I want to hear you commit to something now. I'll send you a crow. I sent.
The Eagles are winning, right? So I'm going to be on their side. I always try and go with the winners.
There you go.
So I'm going to go with the Eagles. What are they, 9-2, 9-3 or something?
9-3, I think.
I'm going to go with the Eagles.
You're going to go with the Eagles.
Yeah, even though Sanchez.
You're a homer. You're a homer, though.
He's a horrible quarterback. I'm not a homo. You call me a homo?
That's what I think he did.
He said I was a homo?
Listen to him. Listen to him. I got one thing to say about Seattle. Their coach looks like he had about 40 fights. You see his nose?
Yeah.
I want to get the damn thing fixed.
Yeah, he makes it.
Ron, you could do the what? His nose is really in bad shape. It looks like he had about 10 fights. Probably a cheerleader hit him with something. I don't know what the hell happened. Cheerleader punched him. But he don't look too tough. Beat Carroll, you know? Frank, do me a favor. Block the number. Would you? Jesus, God. You know? Ronnie, everything's all right up here. It's raining like hell. My pond's filling up with water. We haven't had any bad cold weather. You know,
I mean, you can't take it anyway. You know, you're getting old.
No, I can't. I'm getting old. I'll tell you what. Listen, when I go to the spa, I'm the pinup boy of them old women out there, man. I'm the rage of the pool. Man, they whistle at me and every damn thing. Look at this guy. Ooh.
You know,
I don't hear that when you walk the hell by. They don't say that when you walk by.
Yeah, but I go to a co-ed gym.
Damn, what a stud this guy is. Damn. I'm going to know one thing, Frank. Frank, what the hell does this have to do with boxing? We're supposed to be talking boxing, and you let that guy talk nonsense about me. What? What? We got a comedy show here now.
I'm gonna go. Just tell these guys all those good stories about when you were up against Bill Cosby. Did he reach in for you or anything during those days?
I'm gonna send you the rest of the fish. The fish with dog hair on.
Chris,
I'm gonna stuff my dog.
Cosby was the devil. These guys are on the side of the field.
I'm going to stuff my dog. I'll send you a picture. All right.
Wow.
He ate up all the time, Frank. He ate up all the damn time. Now, I'm going to...
55 minutes remaining. So I'm going to just go back in my shell.
7 o'clock. Put him back in the closet, Frank. Don't let him the hell out next week.
God.
You don't know where the hell he is. All right, guys, I'm going to go eat. I skipped dinner on lunch today.
Hey, Chris, why don't you tune in on Thursdays? Why don't you tune in Thursdays, 1 o'clock to my show, Rejuvenation Health Radio.
I'll get my wife to put it on. She knows how to do that.
And if you
I'm
call,
not,
Joe Walton's been calling
I'll
in.
Call in and harass you. I'm going to call. That's a good idea. You're going to be sorry you told me that. I'll fix you, boy.
All right, guys.
I put 7 pounds on over Thanksgiving. I had to jog 5 miles this morning to get the rest of the 5 off. I couldn't drive my car 5 miles, let alone run 5.
Christ, you can't even fit behind the wheel of your car.
Do something good and send me some diet pills or something, will you? Jesus Christ. My fan club is getting mad at me. My fan club is shrieking with this big belly, you know? Well, I'm going to put my fancy new hat I just bought, and I'm going down to grill and eat.
Damn.
Right. What time is the show over, Frank? How are we doing? What are we got? 10 after?
Yeah, we go. I extended it an hour, but we can go. We're supposed to go 6.
Oh, you did extend it? Oh, all right. I'm in no hurry. I'm in no hurry.
No.
I'm in no hurry. I thought it was the 7 o'clock.
Yeah, well, that we go 6
all right.
I just extended it, but we can go off at 7:10 would be good.
Oh, no, I'm all right. I'm fine. I'm sitting here. I'm not accomplishing a damn thing. Just sitting here listening to Repressy. You know? Not doing a damn thing.
All right. You got help. My small-headed friend, we got a big gut to go with that big head now. Don't tell me this thing. Hey,
it won't be there. It won't be there. When I hit Puerto Rico, I'll dazzle them on the beach this year.
There you go.
I'm even going to go get it. When I walk down that beach this year, you won't recognize me, Ron. You only know me by my voice.
You mean
so
you're
it's the only way you'll know me.
You
see that?
You're going to leave a wheelchair time. Home this year?
Yeah. Hey, Chris, remember this time.
I brought it for you. I brought it for you to use last year, but you were embarrassed. You know? You couldn't go in the sand very good with it. You know? Those things aren't made for the sand. He tried to run in the sand with the damn thing. He sunk. He fell the hell over, then we didn't have to listen to him. We had to listen to him yell for help.
You know, Chris
yeah.
and I both graduated from
He doesn't know you don't put wheelchairs in the sand, you know? Jesus Christ. I'm going to bring my wife on the phone. She'll show you.
There you go.
What's that?
Frank, thank you.
Okay,
you know,
are they throwing us off, Frank?
No, I'm going to leave because I've got to go to the Elks Club. But I will catch you later.
You know, all right, Ron.
Yeah, that's the highlight of his week. Go over to the Elks Club.
The Elks Club.
With them old bastards over there. All them old guys are. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's $2 drink.
Yeah. Go over to the Elks Club there. You should have gone an hour ago.
You know, Chris. Yeah.
All right, guys.
You still can't take it. You know, I know you got
I'm
a
glad,
big head, but geez.
I'm glad my cell phone doesn't work good because I didn't hear half of what the hell you said. So, you never gave me a headache.
All right.
I mean, it sounded like a lot of warbling.
I know.
You know?
You still got the string hooked up to that thing? What do you do? You have a string right there?
By the way, Ronnie, I use my wrist roller. And I want to patent that damn thing. Remember that wrist roller I made down the cellar? I rolled that thing up and down the platform?
Yeah.
I was doing that the other night. I said, I should patent this damn thing.
There you go.
You call it a Rube Goldberg. He called it a Rube Goldberg creation. I'll give you something to talk about. I did it for my golf swing, Frank. I rolled this platform. I got weights on it up and down. He came down my cellar and did nothing but make fun of my... apparatus that I had down there. It wasn't any hefty prices paid for any of that gym equipment I got. But he gave me Ronnie gave me a machine that you put stretch cables on. One of those things and you know what he used for the damn resistance? Rubber bands. Office rubber bands. I said, no wonder he didn't make any gains. Look the hell he was using here. You know? That thing, it kills my shoulders, but I'm working on them. I'm still working on them.
Right,
I got to get them damn.
I only have one word of advice. You know that equipment, instead of patenting it, I would consider giving it to the Smithsonian. They have no, you know, that's prehistoric. They have never seen that kind of equipment. I mean, the case
you never,
probably use that, you know.
You never saw an inventor before. You don't know what the hell. I invented that machine. I'm going to patent that damn thing. Well, you'll see it in Golf Digest next month.
There you
Four
go.
Arms of Steel. Four Arms of Steel by Chris Panarella.
There you go.
Damn, I could see the money rolling in. Damn. Should have done it years ago. Should never listen to him, Frank.
Yep,
he talked me the hell out of it.
There
you
go.
All right, we're going to see next week. We'll talk about the Eagles and who fights tonight. Anybody fight tonight?
Yeah, sure there is.
Gabriel Rosado from Philly and David Lemieux.
Oh, okay. Oh, Lemieux, he's tough.
Yeah, he fights Gabriel
Rosado.
He is
tough.
So.
Rosado is one
I think.
He's one of Russell Pelt's guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, he got his hands full with that Lemieux. He's a nasty guy.
Yeah.
He's tough. Yeah, I have to go with Lemieux in that one.
Yeah.
Ronnie, bet the house on this one. Lemieux. With a KO inside 10. How's that? Have you seen him fight yet, Frank?
Yes.
He's pretty good. Rough as hell. Good, I'll come back and watch that then. That's what I'll do tonight.
Good.
All right, guys. Hey, Ronnie, take it easy.
All right,
Frank. All right, see you guys.
All right, take care.
All right, Dr. Chris.
Ron, you want to plug your quote, show before you leave?
Yeah, if anybody cares to listen to a health show on Thursdays between 1 and 3, it's called Rejuvenation's Health Radio. The first hour is a give and take on the latest advances in medicine. On December 18th, we'll introduce a new feature from 2 to 2:30, a bilingual segment on diabetes and what to do about it. We'll do that show both in Spanish and English. And then in January, it'll be a regular feature. So that phone number is 347-989-8899, 347-989-8899.
Sounds good.
So for the Latinos that have a big problem with diabetes, hopefully we can give them some good information.
Good. Sounds great.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you so much. And,
say hello to Barbara and Ronnie.
All right. Dr. Chris and I have been friends since we've been in the Army, so we go back a long way.
Yep.
Wow.
All right.
That's
see the
Civil
gentlemen.
War, right?
Hey.
Oh,
that
hurts. Whatever testosterone I got left, that hurts. All right,
guys. See
you. All right.
Take care.
Oh, let me just say that's probably been the most hysterical, enjoyable 20 minutes of the last 7 months for me. That was just, wow. And you know what, Butch, I got to say, when those two guys get to going at it, it gets irreverent. And they're Philly guys, man. So as they're going, I'm like, you know what? Somebody's going to mention Cosby. Somebody's going to mention Cosby. Sure enough, they go down that road. I'm like, man, you know what? We've just crossed all boundaries now. We've just crossed the Howard Stern territory now. I knew it. I was like, don't mention Cosby. Don't mention Cosby. Sure enough, there it is. I'm like, here we go. We crossed that bridge now. There's no turning back. We're that type of show. When these two guys come on. Oh, my God. That was so damn entertaining.
This was a good show. This was a good show.
Oh, Ronnie said, but the gym I go to is co-ed. Chris didn't catch that. I caught that,
no,
though. That was so clever. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's funny thing. Chris and he were in the Army, but Ron and I were classmates at St. Joe's.
Oh.
And helped each other get through St. Joe's.
Unbelievable. Oh, my goodness.
But, well, I want to thank you for being on with me again tonight, and all your. And we'll send our deepest Enjoyed thought to the lovely Mr. Z and his lovely bride for their anniversary. Hope you and your families all stay well, and we'll catch up with you next week. You want to leave us out?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Do you, hey, we want to thank Dr. Chris and Dr. Ronnie for being on. Bob is our co-pilot as always, and we'll see everyone next week.
Okay. And we want to thank everybody for calling in. Chris, Ronnie, they always make it a Chris always makes it a happy time, no matter where he is. Ronnie can, when Ronnie's in the mood, he makes it twice as much.
Wow.
These programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation, men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, if you just say thank you or hello, it means a world of good to everybody out there. These are very tough times for guys in uniform, whether it's whether it's on foreign shores or at home. This last year, we lost 11 officers in the state of Florida. So please treat them with respect when you can. These are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Bajer, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwith, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longview Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, DA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-10 at this time, 10-7 at this time, at some time we're going to be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shemalek ma yelama, shemahezah yelama, sona shene vorat fet, hakuig again ma yelama. Spirit and wisdom. whose mind of freeze, so I wish him strength and length of days.
County dispatch to 1999. County dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is Andrew's last call. May God rest his soul.